Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. One in five Columbus City schools is eligible for the new Parent Trigger Law, which permits parents to overhaul chronically underperforming schools in a variety of ways if they choose. Passed as part of the state budget bill in 2011, the measure identified Columbus as the pilot district. Now that there are eligible schools, there are also lots of questions. Ohio Department of Education officials attended a Columbus school board meeting recently to address those questions. They declined an invitation to join us today. Columbus Board of Education member Dominic Peretti accepted our invitation, and welcome to the show, Dom.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
And joining us by phone is the director of Students First Ohio. That's the organization chosen to be the third-party group that interacts with parents in the event of a takeover. Greg Harris, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, I guess Greg Harris and Dom Peretti, I mean, I don't know who can answer this, but what do we mean by a takeover here? What is thought of by that, Greg?
Well, Parent Trigger essentially empowers parents to sign a petition to reform a persistently low-achieving school. So in Columbus, that's defined as a school that has poor academic ratings for three straight years. And so what the trigger process allows is if half the parents or guardians of children attending that school sign a petition, then it compels the school to go through some kind of redesign process.
So a takeover doesn't mean that the parents march into the school and start teaching and being the administrators, right?
No, in fact, the one place where there's been successful trigger campaigns to date is California. And the changes that the schools affected, that the parents affected, were things like, one school took on a greater focus on enrichment activities. Another school took on a greater focus on universal pre-K. Another school took on a college curriculum focus. And then one school opted for to become a sort of a hybrid between a traditional school and a charter. And then there's a process that can lead to no changes at all, that if parents talk to the current school leadership, they may find that they are that they believe in the strategies being pursued by the current principal and teachers, and they want to continue to give that incumbent leadership a chance.
Or, Dom Peretti, the parents could just do nothing at all, right?
Correct.
Absolutely nothing.
Correct. The law is pretty broad and open. And what it's stating as its purpose. Under the pilot project, it basically says a few things: reopen the failing school as a community school, replace at least 70% of the school's personnel, contract with another school district or nonprofit to reopen it, turn operation of the school over to the Department of Education, or any other restructuring that makes fundamental change to these schools.
Dom, the parent trigger was passed as part of the 2011 state budget. Can you recall the circumstances around it? Was there much debate at the time?
Well, the parent trigger provision was actually introduced in the introduced version of the budget. So that was the first version that went to the House that was then debated, changed, passed over to the Senate and conference committee.
Right.
So this provision was in the bill from the beginning.
Okay.
And from what news reports and from what is out there right now, it seems to me that Dr. Harris volunteered the district, as far as I know. That's as much as we know, sort of on as much as I know on the background on that issue.
Well, who is behind it? Do we know that?
Let me clarify. By Dr. Harris, it's not me, Dr. Harris. It's Dr. Jean Harris.
Right. Dr. Jean Harris, former superintendent of Columbus City Schools. Right. Thanks, Greg Harris. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about the parent trigger law in Ohio. It was created as part of the state budget bill in 2011. It goes into effect because the pilot district, Columbus City Schools, now has one out of five of its schools that qualify, which means they're chronically underperforming, and that means the parents can so-called do a takeover. But they have to pull the trigger first. Greg Harris, what do they have to do to pull that trigger? Whatever the outcome might be, what do they first have to do?
Well, half the parents, they have to start a petition drive.
Okay.
So if there's a parent at a school that's on that list of 20 that wants to wage a trigger campaign, that they have to go out and start gathering gathering signatures.
How many do they need?
They need about approximately 50% of the parents of children enrolled in that school. Or if it's a high school, they need not only 50% of the high school, but also 50% of the schools that see that high school. So, as you know, some junior high kids graduate, they're assigned to specific high schools. The district does have numbers of parents in each of the schools, so the parents could turn to the district to figure out how many signatures they need to gather.
Mm-hmm. Don Peretti?
Yeah, I mean, that is correct. You know, one of the concerns that I have this, the broad sort of nature of the language, Students First was taken on to be a neutral third party to help facilitate. But there's nothing in the law that says that anyone else can come into this elementary school and start a petition of their own.
There's nothing in the law that prevents that?
No. So they don't have to use Students First as a facilitator.
And do they don't have to be parents that live in the district?
The law doesn't say
Is that your understanding, Greg Harris, that anybody could come in, that they don't have to actually be parents of students who attend the schools?
To gather the petitions.
That's what I mean, to gather the petitions.
Come in and wage a petition drive. That's something we can't control.
Because that's in the law, right? That you're saying that is because it's in the law that way, right? That you can't control that. Yes, but laws can change. Do you have any concerns, Greg Harris, about the open-endedness of who can come in and initiate the change?
Perhaps. I mean, I think, as a third party here, we really work to protect the integrity of the process. So if a third party did come in to gather signatures, we'd probably, if there were parents who were affected by that, we'd probably try to make available to them information on who that third party is, what their interests are in the education space.
Do you have an obligation to work with another, is your obligation to help parents in the district, or is your obligation to help whoever wants to initiate a petition drive?
No. Our sole obligation is to the parents. So if parents approach us, we will be a resource to them. And we will not only be a resource to them, but we will make sure we're very transparent to the public on the ways we're being a resource. So, for example, if we're giving presentations on the parent trigger law, if we're giving information about school turnaround options or say the report card and how it rates charter schools in the area, we'd make available to the public all the materials we're making available to parents.
Okay. And if an organization came to you, say a charter school organization came to you and said, we want to start a petition, can you help us? You would say, no, we can't.
I would say we can, but we won't. What I would say is we're not going to help engineer any petition drives. What we are going to do, if, for example, if it's a charter network, what we say is we're going to make sure the parents review the report card and look at your track record in educating kids. If parents, and it's still a big if, there are not any trigger campaigns underway as yet, but
right.
if parents choose to pursue one, and they look at, for example, if they look at charters as an option, I think what we would say is you should refer to a report card and look at, do these charter schools do a better job of educating kids than the current school?
Could there be dueling petitions for any given building?
There certainly could, although that would, if the intention is to have a successful trigger campaign, they'd make that very difficult. You can't have half a parent signing dueling petitions.
Right.
But again, that's not, we can't really control that. What we can't control is doing the best. If parents choose to wage a campaign, we have to work to the best of our ability to get them good information on their options.
Okay. Don Peretti?
Thank you, Greg. But, my concern, again, just kind of goes back to sort of the broad general open-endedness of this law. There's no expiration to the pilot project. It goes on in perpetuity. While there to facilitate, I mean, there's nothing that Horizon STEM schools could come in, and some of these schools' population, you know, it can range from 50 to several hundred, depending on different factors. But, you know, there's nothing that says that, you know, they can just get a list of folks. You know, it's public record. You know, they have the ability mm-hmm. to get out into the neighborhoods and to canvass. And in a few days, I mean, you may not even know what's happening.
And they have resources to do that. How would, say, if I'm a parent, Greg Harris, where would my resources come from to generate a petition campaign?
Well, you know, if a parent came forward, you know, we talk to them about the things that they're empowered to do under the law, and it would be our expectation that the school district and the Ohio Department of Education would be a resource to a parent. So, for example, if a parent needed to know how many petitions to gather, who the fellow parents are, you know, we would empower that parent with the kind of information they need to pursue a campaign. If they wanted to have a meeting with fellow parents, we'd be happy to show up to the meeting to help clarify the law, again, to explain their options. And remember, these educational options are pretty much aligned with the President Obama race to the top options for school turnaround. It's similar criteria.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that's foreign to the state of Ohio because we are one of the 10 race to the top states.
Mm-hmm.
So the options available under Parent Trigger are pretty consistent with the options available under the Race to the Top program.
A charter, you know, could come in, and they have resources. They could just pay people to collect the petitions, couldn't they? I mean, there's nothing to stop that. Because it's called the Parent Trigger Law. I think there's an impression a lot of people have that it's just all very grassroots and just parents are involved in this stuff. But that's, Greg Harris, that's not necessarily the case, right?
It's ideally the case,
yeah.
Not necessarily the case. What we're trying to promote, and you know, I've been sending the signal from the get-go, is mm-hmm. that for it to be the authentic, and for the strategies that are pursued, if there is a trigger campaign, to be successful and sustainable, it has to be parent-driven. If there is a charter network that comes into a school, a neighborhood, and tries to organize parents, and that charter network has, you know, Dom mentioned Horizon, but there's a mixed past. You know, I think we can make parents aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
The cruelest outcome of this would be if parents seek an alternative to their existing school, and that alternative ends up being a worse option than the one they had. You know, another important note I want to make is that the report card also should not be taken for these 20 schools. They should not be taken just as a single grade. For example, 8 of the 20 schools, while they have overall poor scores, have very high scores in the area of value added, which means that although the children in these schools are not at grade level, they are showing academic progress. So there's something going on in these schools where the kids are from the beginning of the academic mm-hmm. year to the end of the academic year, are showing measurable growth, and probably if that trajectory continues over time, they will be grade level. So you know, there are different ways you can educate parents, but in many cases, we encourage them to speak to incumbent administrations because mm-hmm. there may be strategies underway that are actually proving effective.
Dumb Purdy.
And Greg's absolutely correct. We've seen a lot of gains across the district in a lot of different areas. You know, the first thing, the third grade reading guarantee, and the gains we saw with that were just spectacular. And with Dr. Good's leadership and the way we were able to get staff and all of our peripheral resources in the community lined up, we really saw huge gains. For example, 4 schools on that list, Highland, Ohio Avenue, Wineland, and Windsor STEM, all saw notable gains in reading, the third grade reading guarantee test, mm-hmm. as well as Windsor STEM seeing notable gains in third grade mathematics as well. So, you know, the focus is there. We can see the results. Again, my concern with this and with the parent trigger in general is that, you know, not only it seems to be very distracting with a lot of things that are going on, you know, what the school board has been doing, what Dr. Good has been doing in the community, this has the ability, in my opinion, to really be distractive and divisive amongst the community. And I feel like that doesn't hurt anybody but the children more than anything else.
We'll talk about potential distractions. For now, I have to say that this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Stay with us. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today we're talking about the parent trigger. It's a law that allows parents and maybe others to overhaul failing public schools in the city of Columbus by replacing staff or converting to charters or changing the focus of the school. There's a lot of different ways you can change the school. Who gets to change it and who makes those decisions seems to be what's very much up in the air. The measure was passed as part of the 2011 Ohio budget. It applies only to Columbus City Schools, as I said, which is serving as a pilot. One in five of the city schools has been underperforming for 3 years and therefore is eligible for a takeover, according to the law. Still with us is Columbus School Board member Dominic Peretti, with us in the studio, and by phone, the director of Students First Ohio, Greg Harris. Students First was chosen to be the facilitator in the case of implementation of the trigger law. If you have a question or comment, I guess you could join the club, but you could also give us a call and share your question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, Greg Harris, you said that former Columbus City School Superintendent Gene Harris volunteered this district for as the pilot district for this, but Dom Peretti, I mean, what compels the district at this point? She's not superintendent anymore. Is there some legal, binding legal compulsion that the city has to go through with this?
It's my understanding. The revised code is revised code.
So it's law.
It's law. So we have to follow the law.
And what does the school board know about why she volunteered the city? Does anybody know?
I have no idea. And as you know, I'm a new board member,
right,
and I didn't interact with Dr. Harris before this. So I don't know what she was thinking when it came to volunteering. It's very open, general legislation. It would, I think, it would raise eyebrows on anyone. And, you know, if you're in a high-poverty urban district, you're going to have a lot of issues that we really need to bring the community together. And something like this, like I said before, very divisive, distracting, and I really don't think it's good for our children.
See, and I take the opposite.
You like the open-endedness of it.
No, I like the idea of empowering parents and giving parents leverage.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily just empower parents. The divisiveness, couldn't there be divisiveness if an outside group comes in and tries to do this instead of parents?
Well, we can entertain a lot of hypotheticals and not talk about the intent of the law itself.
Right.
But the intent of the law itself is saying that if you're a parent of a child who's attending a school where the kids are not learning to read at adequate levels or not learning math at adequate levels, and you feel helpless to do anything about it, this law says you are no longer helpless. That if you and a majority of parents think that there's an unresponsive school administration, that the school is failing to educate your children, that your children are on track for a life of poverty and struggle, you can do something about it. So we could treat this like a divisive process, we can treat it like a distraction, or we can treat it like an opportunity to say, hey, this is a way to empower parents with information. This is a way to give them leverage to ask questions. If there are changes they want to see, they can pursue them. But again, the outcome may well be that they are more aligned with mm-hmm. the current school strategy, that they feel like the school is doing things to close achievement gaps.
If the intent was to empower parents, then what do we know about why the law doesn't limit who can initiate these trigger actions to parents?
Well, look, no one could put a gun to a parent's head and say, sign my petition. If there are people that want to come into a district and say, hey, sign my petition to become this kind of charter school, they can do that. We can entertain the hypothetical, but there can also be counter voices mm-hmm. that say, look, if it's a bad face, if it's a bad actor in the education space who has a bad track record, they can be exposed. And we have tools now. I mean, the report card is a tool. If you're a charter network, for example, that's what we seem to keep getting back to.
Mm-hmm.
We can show their track record in cities, whether it's a good one or a bad one. But again, we're entertaining what could go wrong with the law, which I guess you can do. But I don't want that to drown out the positive potential of the law. As far as I'm not interested in waging an educational civil war in a neighborhood or with different educational interest groups, I hope we embrace this as an opportunity that if parents do come forward, they're going to feel empowered to have a role in their children's school in making a better school. And that could be the existing school, or that could be changes to the existing school, or it could be a charter school. That's the intent, empowering parents.
Okay, so some board members have expressed doubt that Students First would be impartial because of its pro-charter position. Did Students First get the approval of the school board to be the third-party facilitator? How did that come about, Greg Harris?
Well, first of all, pro-charter positions is a little vague. We don't really favor one school type over the other.
Okay.
And I'd also say that we're among the strongest voices out there for charter accountability.
Uh-huh.
We think there are some very good ones, for example, in Columbus, that have earned a place in education space. But we also think there are a lot of charter schools that need to be closed
right.
because they've done a bad job.
So how did you get the job?
Well, we didn't apply for it. The Ohio Department of Education approached us and okay. said, we want to have a third party help us in aiding this process. Students First is not neutral on a parent trigger. We support it.
Mm-hmm.
We support it for the same reasons we supported the A2F report card. We think it empowers parents. The report card empowers them with information. The trigger empowers them with systemic leverage. But we are neutral on the outcomes. So we're not trying to steer parents to a certain direction. Make your traditional school into a public school. Or turn your school over to the state,
mm-hmm.
or choose this turnaround model. We're not going to do that. And I think if the process does come forth, if there is a trigger campaign, I think the process will be our best defense because we're going to run it with integrity and transparency. There's not going to be anything secretive about it. We'll share the kind of resources, the kinds of questions we're getting from parents. We'll share the kind of resources we're giving them. And people will know, how we're going about being a resource for parents who might want to take a trigger campaign.
Well, my concern, with a lot of this though is, it seems like after it's done, we'll get a lot of answers to the questions. Who owns the buildings? Who pays the bills? How do the dollars flow from the state and property taxes from the local level? We have previous agreements, PACT, Memorandum of Understanding with Ohio State and the city with our East Feeder Pattern. There are a lot of, questions that come all back to the general open-endedness of this legislation, and we just don't have answers to those. And I'm concerned, even if guidelines are written into rules by the Department of Education, that they could be challenged at any point, and they could circumvent that and come to the original legislation.
That, I wanted to get the whole idea of rules. You're listening mm-hmm. to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. How are the rules? Who is supposed to write them? The Ohio Department of Education?
In consultation with the district, yes.
So
I do want to make an important point, though. It's not the obligation of citizens, of parents, to conform to the rules of institutions. It's the obligation of public institutions to conform and be responsive to citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some unknowns. Any new law that's passed, whether it's tax law or education law, requires a systemic adjustment. But in the end, if parents are demanding certain kinds of changes to their schools that are well thought out and reasoned, it's up to the institutions to figure out a way to accommodate them. It's not up to the parents to learn how to accommodate the institutions.
Okay, so a big set of questions is about money and assets. Who owns the buildings? And whether district taxpayers would have to continue to pay on bonds for schools that were taken over if they are turned over to a charter. Are you saying, Greg, that those are the kind of questions that are answered after, for instance, there's a takeover by a charter?
Yeah, I think the district just has to figure it out.
the district or the parents who live in the school or live in that part of the district that feeds that school?
The parents, by and large, aren't politicians. They aren't policy experts. They're not full-time legislators. Their job is just to figure out how can I create the best educational options for my child. It's the jobs of people who do this for a living to accommodate their desires.
Okay. Don Peretti, Dom mentioned distractions, that if there's so much stuff going on in the district right now, this could be a distraction. Greg Harris, could you respond to that?
It could be a distraction to people who work for the district. I don't think it's a distraction to parents. I mean, I think
we're very focused on, student achievement. And we this district and Dr. Good have implemented a lot of new policies, have really brought a lot of resources together for the third grade reading guarantee, and those results are evident. And with these schools, we will be having task force, math and reading task force. We will be looking at best use of time, focused teacher development, open houses, more parental engagement. So we are making steps, and we continue on, always have. I just think that the actual pulling the trigger, it just seems to be very severe, a lot of unknowns, and I feel like it's just bad policy for a school district and someone that is charged with the fiduciary responsibility of that school district.
Greg Harris?
Well, look, Dom is making really good points. I mean, the Columbus Public Schools, under the leadership of the current superintendent, a lot of community involvement, is doing some remarkable things. And so if there are parents that have issue with a school that for 3 years has had a track record of that hasn't been successful for the most part, this is an opportunity to explain to parents at the neighborhood level what's being done. I'm not convinced that even if parents start to pursue this, for example, I would say students first, we would first encourage them to talk to the district mm-hmm. and to talk to neighborhood the leadership of their neighborhood school, because they may well buy into the strategies underway. What Dom is talking about, if that's communicated at the grassroots level, they may well get more parent buy-in. And let me just say, if I were superintendent of a school district, I'd want to have a parent trigger. Giving parents good information about schools, giving them leverage to compel a response to their concerns, if done right, it can actually be a positive development for a neighborhood school, not a negative development, not a distraction. That's the kind of process I hope, if this does come to fruition, that we can help to facilitate.
We have an email from Angel. She writes, "Poverty and its complications are the main reason children struggle in school. So I'm not sure how a trigger law would help students. This opportunity to empower parents seems to mirror that instability poverty causes in these children's lives. Parents who are too busy working and struggling to provide a stable life won't have time to mount one of the campaigns. They're just prey for charter schools and other nefarious education reform." Greg Harris?
I don't think this is the intention of the email, but I think that's kind of patronizing the parents.
Well, I figured you would say that.
Parents are busy.
Yeah, I'm busy. I mean, I can't imagine launching one of these kinds of things, just an average parent.
Well, if a parent is motivated, and chances are that parent knows a number of other parents mm-hmm. of children at the same school, they'll get it done. Mm-hmm. That's not really for us to determine. I don't think parents who are furnished with good information, such as the school report cards, such as dialogue from school leadership, I think that parents are more savvy than perhaps they're given credit. This should not be a process to dupe and manipulate parents. It should be a process to empower them with information so they can make the right decisions for their kids. The whole point, and especially if you're talking about a high poverty school, mm-hmm. you want parents to be empowered.
Well, you want them to be involved.
Maybe you want them to be involved. This is one way to do that. And if there are some neighborhood schools that are proactive in involving parents, that there are teachers in many cases, in some cases, that will go meet with parents of their mm-hmm. children, that they go above and beyond. If the school is doing a good job with that, then there's probably not going to be a trigger campaign.
Don Peretti?
You know, I agree with the email. Poverty is a huge indicator when it comes to a child's educational success. You know, as a school board member, I understand that there is only so many things that I can do within my jurisdictions as a school board member. You know, educating a child has a lot of things in the community that come together and help enrich that child, whether it's health care, whether it's stable neighborhoods, whether it's parental involvement, whether they have dental access, whether there's food at nighttime. And that's really what makes up and a child's education with the school and great teachers, which we have, all these different things. I don't believe that just converting the school to a charter school is going to be able to alleviate some of those other things in a child's periphery that affects his or her growth. And that's where my major concern comes from.
Converting to a charter school is one iteration of this. Mm-hmm. There are lots of others that Greg Harris brought up that parents could just decide to do nothing. They could decide that we need to have a better PTA or that we need to maybe have a different kind of focus at this school. We need better classes in this or we need fewer classes in that kind of a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's that there's a continuum of options here.
Yes.
So you're not opposed to all...
I'm sorry.
I guess, but Dom, you're worried about the more extreme option becoming the...
Sure. I mean, yeah. We've had teacher turnover and principal changes and different things like that.
Already.
At these schools, sure. You know, this happens every year. People retire. You know, there has been changes. And part of me, you know, I don't mean to sound like pessimistic. I just feel that this has a lot of different options, yes. But when you pull a trigger, I think the real option people are going to want to pull is opening up
major
charter
change.
School. Yeah, is major change. This school board and Dr. Good, you know, we are very, very open to innovation, to change, to parental involvement, and to making sure that Dr. Good has all those tools to implement those. We will always be in that position. I worry about the first option.
Being the extreme option.
Being the extreme option.
Well, we'd love to hear from parents from Columbus City Schools. Maybe you're someone who might be affected by this, your children, or you live in the area where your children attend one of these schools. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you think about this? What do you think about the parent trigger in Columbus City Schools? Tell us. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking today about the so-called parent trigger law, an Ohio law affecting just the pilot district of Columbus City Schools that permits parents and others to overall underperforming schools. Ohio passed the parent trigger law 3 years ago as part of the state budget. Six other states have trigger-styled laws. They include Texas, Indiana, California, Connecticut, Louisiana, and Mississippi. California is the only state so far to implement a parent trigger type law, however. Still with us is Columbus School Board member Dominic Peretti, by phone the director of Students First Ohio, Greg Harris, and joining us by phone from Denver is education policy specialist at the National Conference of State Legislatures, Josh Cunningham. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
In the states where these laws have passed, where has the impetus come from for the laws? What do we know about that?
Well, I think that's hard to say. I think there certainly is a feeling that, you know, that we have a handful of, in most states, pretty much every state has a handful at least of really low, persistently low-performing schools.
Mm-hmm.
And there are federal laws that that require some sort of intervention after 5 years of that, of persistently low performing. But I think there's a feeling that that might be too long. If you're a first grader and you're in a school that is starting that first year of low performance, you're going to be out of that school before any intervention is even taking place. So I think that part of the push behind the parent trigger is the idea that, okay, we need to do this faster. The parents themselves perhaps have a better idea of what they want their school to look like.
In Ohio, it's not just parents who can initiate these sorts of takeovers or changes, however, whatever iteration they may take. Is that the case in the other states where it's kind of open-ended who can initiate these changes?
Yeah, it is fairly open-ended, I think. I mean, obviously, it still requires the parents to sign the petition, but
right.
In each of these states, it requires quite a bit of an organizational effort to carry it out. So I think there's often some sort of, whether it could be within the state, but still some sort of external third-party group that is kind of pushing it.
And apparently California is the only one that is actually used. Does that mean that efforts to initiate the trigger law in other states just have failed, and California is the only one where they've been able to get the petition signed and so forth?
You know, I haven't seen a lot of evidence of many efforts in other states other than California. So it could be that they just haven't been able to garner the momentum to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a big reason why we haven't seen other states take a part in this is that a lot of the states just don't have as many schools. Like California has a lot of schools that qualify for it just by the nature of the size of the state.
Uh-huh.
And other states like, I think it's Ohio requires 5%, the lowest 5%. So first you're limiting to just those 5% of schools and then finding the school within those 5% that has the motivation of parents and the resources and the organizational capacity to make this effort possible. The chances are pretty slim that this is going to actually happen.
And in Ohio, they started with a pilot district, Columbus City Schools, which is why we're talking about it today. Is that the case, say, in California? I mean, did the other states have pilot districts that they started with?
No, actually, Ohio is the only one that has really done it with a pilot program.
So tell us about what's happened in California, where it's occurred and how they achieved it.
Sure. There's been three successful uses of it in California, but I'll start with the first one, which was not successful but got a lot of attention. And that was at McKinley Elementary School, which is in Compton in L.A. And they went through the whole process. They were the first school to do it, they got a big pushback from the district because they were trying to convert the elementary school into a charter school.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an issue with, once they gathered the petitions, some parents wanted to withdraw their signature, claiming mm-hmm. that they weren't properly informed of what they were signing.
Mm-hmm.
And in California at the time, there wasn't really a mechanism for that. So it created a lot of legal issues, and it led to a fairly prolonged legal fight. But ultimately, the effort was struck down by the courts, saying that the petition gatherers did not properly format their signatures. They didn't collect the dates of the signatures the way that they were supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pretty technical reason why it got struck down. So that effort, that first effort failed. However, the second effort was at Desert Trails Elementary, which also got a lot of attention. And it was, again, very controversial. The school was, they're trying to convert the school into a charter school. There's a lot of issues about whether the charter school operators were kind of pushing this for their own interests or whether it was really the parents that were leading the petition effort.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, the parents won the fight. In that school district, the district fought back. They tried to file a lawsuit to challenge it. But ultimately, the parents won the fight and were able to convert the school into a charter school, which it's operating now as a charter school.
How long did it take from beginning to end?
Probably... I don't know exactly. I think it's probably about a year and a half.
That's not so bad.
Years. Yeah, I mean, it's not so bad. I think they're trying to get it to the legal process as quickly as possible. As far as some things go, it wasn't so bad. But it did create a lot of issues within the community there. You know, part of the issue with this is if you have even if you have 60% of the parents that sign a petition, it's enough to trigger the intervention. But you still are left with 40% of the parents who don't agree. So,
and do they have to send their kids to that school?
No, they don't have to. Absolutely not.
Okay.
But like in the case of this Desert Trails Elementary, it was in a pretty rural area, so they didn't have a lot of other school options anyway.
Okay, so that wouldn't necessarily be the case in an urban area like Columbus.
That's correct.
Right. Don Peretti, did you want to say something?
Yeah, it was my understanding, just looking at the Desert Trails Preparatory Academy example, I was just looking online, the San Bernardino County Sun basically said that, you know, the executive director of school said 78% of the current neighborhood students stayed, and around 50% of the incoming kindergarten class stayed. So, you know, to me, it just makes it seem like a lot of students that were normally there are not there anymore. So I didn't know if he had any more information on that.
You know, I don't. It's an interesting statistic. Again, you know, it's a fairly rural area, so I don't know how many other school options were that viable. But certainly, you know, if they had 35 or 40% of the parents, I think it was, that didn't sign the petition at that school, there could be a number of them who decide to take their child elsewhere.
In California and elsewhere, maybe I've already asked this, but are there the different iterations of change that can occur? It doesn't have to be a charter school, right?
That's correct. There's actually two other examples where parents have collected enough signatures. One was at 24th Street Elementary School in Los Angeles, and while they collected enough signatures to trigger the change, they actually were able to work with the district there, and rather than convert it into a charter school and take it out of the district's control, the district was able to maintain control of the school but agreed to impose a number of significant reforms within the school.
Don Peretti, to what extent is Columbus City Schools compelled? Now, if it's the pilot program and at the time the superintendent of the district signed this district up for this, is it possible that the district doesn't have standing to oppose efforts to initiate it, as they did, for instance, in California?
As far as I know,
yeah,
when it's passed into law as revised code, we have to be compliant with that
law.
And
you can't, like, go to court to challenge the legitimacy of the campaigns or anything like that. You don't know.
I don't know.
What about that, Greg Harris? Any sense about that?
This was passed, I believe, in the 2011 budget.
It's
state law. There could be legal action and lawsuits. But hopefully, in the case I was just cited, The district, the school, and the parents come to a desirable solution. You know, some of the changes that are made at these schools are not a major. I mean, there's another California school that obtained additional buses for children so they could have access to more after-school and enrichment activities. So I don't. There are extreme cases, but then there are lesser cases where modest changes were made, or there was better collaboration, and hopefully that would be the model if something happens in Columbus.
If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Nancy in Westerville, you're on the area. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm speaking as the mother of a Columbus City school teacher, so I hear what all happens in the classroom. And the person on your program who earlier said if a child goes to a charter school, they still come from the same background, and they take with them to the charter school the problems they come to school with. And I feel for the parents who really want to make a positive impact on their children, because they're dealing with parents who are not involved at all. And it's so hard for the teachers when they have kids coming who are not equipped to learn simply because of the houses. I'm not even saying homes, because they don't come from homes. They come from a house, and maybe every night of the week it's a different house. So until we address these issues, if you have every charter school, they're still going to have these kids come from different backgrounds that need to be dealt with. And I think somebody needs to have the courage to take the kids who get in the way of everybody learning out of a regular classroom and have mandatory family counseling to help change the dynamics from where these kids come, because they're having a very negative effect on teachers as they try to teach.
Well, let's just throw that out there, Nancy. Thanks for the call. Greg Harris, is that a potential iteration? In other words, school, you know, you get enough parents, they sign the petition, they say, this is what we want to do. We want to force the other parents to have to go into family counseling to help make them better, help their children be better prepared to start school.
Yeah, though there are better ways to do that.
I didn't put it very well, but, you know.
No. But I think we know what you're saying. And, you know, I'm calling from Cincinnati. My sons are Cincinnati public school students, and Cincinnati has a partnership with a program called Strive, which is a network of wraparound supports. And for example, they have things like one of their partners is the United Way Success by Six program, which mm-hmm. is a parent intervention program, which goes out and helps parents, help their children become kindergarten ready.
Mm-hmm.
So there are models of school turnaround, which actually acknowledge that the impact that poverty has on learning, that acknowledges the unique barriers that impoverished children face, acknowledges the barriers that parents of impoverished parents face, and the smart schools are doing things about that.
Josh Cunningham, have any of the efforts in California addressed those kinds of things instead of changing the school, changing what goes to the school?
I think there are certainly efforts outside of kind of the parent trigger issue. there are constantly efforts of trying to find ideal ways of turning around low performing schools, because certainly the cultural aspects of the school, play a huge role in the future success of the school as well. So again, like if you convert it to a charter school, like the caller said,
mm-hmm.
you don't necessarily automatically change the culture of the school. And so, although you can go a long way with having some strong leadership in the school, they're going to have a lot of the same community problems that still existed beforehand.
A silver bullet. There has to be a lot of special kinds of interventions, and Columbus Public Schools actually has many underway that can help transform a school. Parent trigger is just has to do with empowering parents to expedite change if they feel it's needed.
Josh Cunningham, at the school where they did. It took about a year and a half, but they finally did get a takeover by a charter school with the approval of the parents and the community after the lawsuits were all over with. Is there do they then go another 3 years? And if they're still underperforming, can it happen all over again?
That's not really very clear in the California statutes, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a question that I've thought of before, too. And I know that actually Louisiana addressed this and did say that you would be able to then kind of retract to what it was before.
So you could keep every 3 years just churning in Louisiana then, ostensibly.
You can go back and forth. But mm-hmm. I think that one thing to note is that if you're converting it to a charter school, that charter school is going to have a limited time that it has to show its performance value. It's going to then be under a charter authorizer, which will then have be able to make a decision about, in 4 or 5 years, about whether the school's been meeting expectations.
Okay.
So there'll be mechanisms in place at that point, which can make those decisions as well. But again, if we're talking about putting that decision in the hands of the parents, expediting it, I'm not sure. It's unclear in California whether you'd be able to convert it back.
And Greg Harris, I've just got seconds left, but what do we understand about the Ohio law in this case?
I'm not sure. I think charters have a higher obligation to show immediate conversion.
But that's outside of the trigger law, right?
Yeah, I mean, the best use of the law would be to give time for reforms mm-hmm. to take. What you don't want is upheaval in a school at a school every single year. So that's why there's a 3-year norm. There's a 3-year. A trend that's in place now.
Right.
A school has to exhibit certain trends over a 3-year period to become eligible.
Greg Harris, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Greg Harris, he's director of Students First Ohio. That's the organization that would help parents facilitate changes in their schools and Columbus City Schools. Dominic Peretti, member of Columbus Board of Education, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And also Josh Cunningham, education policy specialist at the National Conference of State Legislatures. Thanks so much, Josh.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.